ono ye Kampala. Chechibuga Kampala.
Poetry has been deep-rooted throughout our culture.
Chechibuga Kampala.
And in different ways, people would add instrumentations and what and what.
Muchibuga Jeva.
The first time I heard about poetry or spoken word, I think that was like 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had gone for a climate change boot camp because I'm an environmental scientist. There is what we call scientific discovery by serendipity. You're intending to discover something else, but you discover something amazing along the way. One time I'm in office, I'm on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
I see some guy called Prince EA
doing
a piece about the environment. Yeah, he was doing a piece like randomly on a YouTube. Then Prince EA doing something about the environment. Then I'm like, okay, I have the science and I can write. So I did my first piece called Green Native.
Mm-hmm.
It was about environment education and activism. I want to shout out to Tontoma because they gave me my first platform. Sometimes you're inspired by people who do good. You're like, then sometimes you're like, okay, this one has done it in a bad way. I can do better. In May, I graduated at Makerere University for my master's in science in environment and natural resource management.
Congratulations,
so,
man.
Yeah, yeah. Right now, I'm into environmental consultancy and a bit of research and here, but also the spoken word and what. You need to have a hustle that supports the artist. I perform at conferences. There are sometimes when those small gigs or the deals in poetry supported me in education. If you're to be a full-time creative, you have to make sure every time you step out of your house, you're getting paid. Times are hard, but be part of something. Social group, whatever. You talk to people and what. Because sometimes you never know the people you're meeting.
AfroMillennial, the podcast, is a casual sound space for millennial creatives in Uganda and across the African continent to share their life stories. The podcast discusses a healthy balance of their professions, passions, and personal lives and offers a bit of perspective and lessons from their life experiences. Come on, let's have fun.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are welcome to yet another episode of AfroMillennial, the podcast, which is basically a sound space where we get to meet millennial creatives in Uganda and beyond, just to know a little bit about them beyond the work that we know them for. We tap into their personal lives, we tap into their creative processes, we tap into what's gone right and what's gone wrong with how they do their work, and just, you know, reflect and share lessons across. My name is Anthony Michael Mwami. I am the host of the podcast. And with me in the room today is a prolific spoken word artist. His name precedes him. His work precedes him. He needs absolutely zero introductions. So I won't give you his name. He'll cue in an intro for himself. But before we delve into that, the past 2 weeks, we've been reflecting a little bit on our past episode, which was with Catherine Nyahanga, who runs Gratitude with Kath, a social space for mental wellness and healing. And quite a bit of feedback came in, your thoughts on the previous episode around dealing with rejection, around limitations on when you're supporting the people that are close to you or the people that you're surrounded by. And at this point, we'd just like to share with you some of the feedback that came in from a lot of you.
Hi, AfroMillennial. My name is Winnie Natite of Kilemba, and I listened to Kat's episode, the podcast where you hosted her, and I must say it was a very good episode, a lot to learn from, given that Kat's voice was very, very calm. It felt like sitting through a session of counseling and guidance, and for me, when it comes to rejection, because it's one of the things that you talked about, I usually try to avoid it so much in a way that when I meet new people or people I like, I tend to stay away from them until I read maybe a sign that maybe they like me. And that's when I try to talk to them. But from this episode, I've learned that you just have to talk to people that you feel like maybe you like. And then if it doesn't work out, it's okay. It's okay. You can always just accept it, because it's true. Not everyone is meant for us. And then the other takeaway is not feeling bad about you sharing your personal experiences in life for fear of, because we always have a fear of people judging us. So I've also learned that I shouldn't fear to do that, especially given the fact that I always meet so many, especially young people. I've learned to just share, because, you know, it helps them. I always meet students. I meet students a lot. And I know by sharing some of my personal experiences, they can always learn from these things. Yeah, so thank you so much, Mami, for bringing this to us. And I can't wait for the next episode and the next guest that you host. Thank you so much. Bye.
Hey, hey, this is Raymond Kaheti. I was happy with Kat's part, especially where she talks about how you are going through a lot of things and you don't even know where to start, you know, to share all these emotions at all. We're so sad. We put on, you know, quotes of sarcasm or comedy, you know, to just to live by. But the groups, the support groups that have been put up and all, to help, you know, people detox, like she called it, the detox groups and all, would be nice, you know, for the mental health.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Offre Millennial, the podcast.
Thank you so much, guys. It means the world to us when we get these bits of feedback. Please do not hesitate to share with us any other thoughts that you might have. The whole point of AfriMillennial, the podcast, is to engage beyond just the guests, but also people that listen in and have their thoughts aired on the podcast. So, in the house, please, introduce yourself.
Yes, sir. Ninze, you know, I'm Soga. Ninze Isabirie Godfrey Magada Mitch Jr.
Isabirie Godfrey Magada Mitch Jr.
Yes.
That's a mouthful. So what names do you go by?
Isabirie Mitch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like if I'm performing.
Yes. Isabirie Mitch is in the house, ladies and gentlemen. Pleasure to have you.
Absolutely.
How are you doing?
I'm
okay?
I'm blessed and not complaining. I should say that, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You can't complain. Right before here, you had bits of work that you had cooking in the studio, you told me.
It has been a busy week, like a busy week.
So things are looking up.
No, okay, you know, if the business comes with money,
uh-huh,
you know, but sometimes you're looking at the future, like, let me do this and you know.
Yes.
Yeah, but I'm hopeful and optimistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's business must be coming with money. I'm optimistic that it will show up with money.
Hopefully, man, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mitch, you are known for quite a number of literary writings. You've been doing spoken word for quite a while. You are known in the creative spaces.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you've blown up on TikTok over time. You know about that. I
don't know the perspective of blowing up.
You're a ticking time bomb.
I don't know
on
the
TikTok
perspective, but I don't know, like, okay, people share yeah, different, because okay, I'm on some platforms because I'm an artist, you know, but I can't keep up with posting, like, all the time regularly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're the creator, we are the curators. So the curators are telling you have blown up, sir. You're a sensation. You're a sensation. Mitch, tell us a little bit about the inspiration for you branching out into spoken word. Why spoken word?
I'm an environmental scientist, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There is what we call scientific discovery by serendipity. Like, you're on a journey to discover something else, but you discover, you know, okay, you're targeting something else, but you discover something else.
Scientific discovery by serendipity.
Yeah. like you don't intend, you're intending to discover something else, but you discover something amazing along the way.
I feel like you consumed all the English we have for this episode.
Oh,
we should do the rest in English. In Lusaka.
No, it's
okay. Is this how you discovered your gift in spoken word?
I'm a speaker, like literally I speak. Yes. But you know, the way we are inspired.
Yeah.
You know, some people you can look at someone doing something in a bad way, and you're like, I can do better. Then sometimes you see someone doing something good, you're like, yeah, I can also do that. So it has been like either way. But a brief background, like the first time I heard about poetry or spoken word, I think that was like 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had gone for a climate change boot camp because I'm an environmental scientist.
Mm-hmm.
Then I happened to land on some guys called the Story People.
Okay.
Even Davis, the poet, was there. Okay, I was intrigued, but I didn't know. Then after some time, towards mid-2017, either like July or 2017, I was at MOOC.
Yeah.
Then a friend dragged me to Kelele, actually.
And that was why you took it up?
I didn't take it up at that time, but somehow, because I didn't know Kelele happens like a fortnight, I came back the next Friday, I bounced. Then I gave up like for the next, 3 to 4 months?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then one time I'm in office, I'm on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
I see some guy called Prince EA
doing
a piece about the environment.
I think I know Prince EA.
Yeah, he was doing a piece like randomly on YouTube. Then Prince EA doing something about the environment. Then I'm like, okay, I have the science and I can write. So I did my first piece called Green Native.
Mm-hmm.
It was about environment education and activism.
So before you went to Kelele, you were an environmental scientist.
Even right now, still.
Even right now, you're still an environmental scientist.
Yeah.
At that point, did you have any underlying interests in doing spoken word, or was it like a spark change that came to you?
I'm a lover of words.
Mm-hmm.
Like I listen to hip hop, battle rappers, stand up comedians.
And you've grown up doing that,
like listening.
When you watched the people at Kelele, it hit you that this was something that you could do.
Actually, yeah,
and it you hit thought me. Of venturing into it.
Like 3 months later is when I decided to pick up the pen and write.
Yeah. What was your first piece like? What motivated your first piece? What was it about? What did you write about?
It's called Green Native. It's a piece about the environment.
Yeah.
So Prince EA was doing something about the environment. So I was like, okay, I can do this.
Mm.
So that's when I wrote my first piece.
Yeah.
There is a line where I say, the 50K not with the gorilla and the 20K not with the fountain. It is the same money we use to destroy the habitats of the gorillas in the mountain.
My goodness.
Trying to give angles and stuff, yeah. I remember those lines, yeah.
So this episode is going to basically have punchlines here and there, here and there. Would you say you're focusing more on spoken word now than you are on environmental science?
You know, I rarely tell people, but in May, I graduated at Makerere University for my master's in science in environment and natural resource management.
Congratulations, so, man.
Yeah. Right now, I'm into environmental consultancy and a bit of research and here, but also the spoken word and read. Yeah.
What was the reception of your first piece like? How did the audiences receive it? Did you ever showcase it somewhere?
I should say I'm blessed and humbled. The audiences have been receptive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the best satisfaction you can ever get as a spoken word artist
is
having a listening audience.
Mm-hmm.
This is where audiences, where the biggest percentage was full of artists.
Yeah.
So, you know, artists can appreciate art more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to shout out to Ton Toma because they gave me my first platform. Arinda Duffin, then Samantha, I think she was also there.
Yeah,
Samantha or the Emotional Stripper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's like her stage name.
Yeah, Emotional Stripper. Yeah, that's her stage name actually. Emotional Stripper.
Well, that's someone to watch.
Yeah, she's
that's
amazing.
Someone
brother.
To go
she's
see perform.
And she's a big advocate for mental health awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So from what I gathered from what you shared, your very first piece was done in the English language. Am I right?
Yes.
And I know from your recent EP and from the poems that I've watched you perform that you have sort of transitioned from that to doing spoken word in a local dialect. Why that switch? What motivated that switch? And was it hard for you to transition to that switch?
If you remember, I told you Sometimes you're inspired by people who do good. You're like, then sometimes you're like, okay, this one has done it in a bad way. I can do better.
Yeah.
So it was both sides.
You saw somebody doing it badly?
Yeah, kind of. I don't want to drop the name, but I was like, yeah.
I was about to nudge you into dropping names.
No, actually, I'm not dropping any name. But yeah, I saw okay. someone, I was like, yeah.
And you're like, I can deliver that better.
Yeah.
So you primarily do Luganda.
People that don't know me.
Yeah.
It's just that the reception of the Luganda pieces has been good and massive. People can relate to them.
Yeah.
But actually, before that, I had like only two Luganda pieces.
What were the rest in?
English.
In English?
Yeah.
So you would say the audience has had an effect on that transition? The audience sort of also had a bit of motivation for that transition because the Luganda pieces have really gotten reception.
No, like it depends on the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, I'm a writer, but sometimes I look at the angle. How can I relate with my audience as much
as
possible?
Yes.
So because I've had shows when I'm performing for should I say a downtown kind of audience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it depends.
So up to date, you still have those audiences whose reception would be better with English poems than the soccer poems.
No, because I perform at conferences, what. So it depends. Okay, it was an initiative as me as an artist. I was like, how more would I relate with the audience?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was like preparation, you know.
Yeah.
Mm.
Beautiful. So you've been doing poetry for quite a while.
Should I say 3 years?
Three years.
I removed the 2 years of lockdown because I was locked up. Really. Yeah, I'm for real.
But were you not doing anything during the lockdown at all for the poetry?
No, actually, during lockdown, I was focused on my research for university.
Makes sense. So would you say you've noticed a change in the poetry space from when you first joined it to where it's currently at, or is the change stagnant in terms of how much people appreciate the art of poetry?
The change is more to there are some people who have taken this professionally and the way, you know.
Yeah.
I want to shout out to Wek and Sebo Lule and even Ibrahim Solo. Like, you can feel the effort, man.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, yo, Abasaji Abakula. You know, man, I just got my EP and Wek has an album coming out.
Yeah.
Sebo Lule has two albums. Yeah. He has a website. And collection as well. So, yeah. But it was about patience and what, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you say there are many poets monetizing their talent, or would you say there are more poets still doing it purely for passion than for monetization? Because you say these guys have released albums, so they're definitely starting to reap out of their hard work in poetry.
Yeah.
Is that something that's cutting across to even the newer poets, or is it something that is still...
Not to brag, but there are some people who can look up to me, right? If you said it, you're like, okay, now our poetry can be consumed in audio or visual. You know, we need to package it. How can people get it?
Yeah.
Because now people are more... The reading culture, the reason why I call it a culture, it has to be cultivated over time.
Yes.
And somehow some people are not so much into the reading. So we need to understand the times are changing with the audience and that. So we can package the poetry for the people.
Yes.
And even dialects, we need to understand our audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I usually tell people you can't do Shakespeare poetry for the people. You know, so it makes more sense when people relate to you.
There's a beautiful, you hinted on something beautiful about packaging.
Yeah.
And like you said, I know that our generation is transitioning a little bit away from the text, the written, to more performative presentations. Is poetry thriving more in stage performances, or is it thriving more with album sales and like audio, like visual recordings and everything?
It's about discovering your niche.
Yeah.
Many people are publishing collections, you know, collections, and it depends either way, because at the end of the day, it's about the person,
yeah.
You know. So it depends on the initiative, because I'm also writing on a poetry collection, like just in text and what. So
what motivates your pieces, and how often do you write them? Do you do you pick motivation from, like, things around you? Do you, is it more around experience? Because I've listened to some of your pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
That there was one piece that really got to me that was sort of a message to a girl, but in being a message to a girl, it was talking about surroundings and, you know,
like
the heritage of space and things of the sort. Yeah, and it sounded really, really deep, like you had really, really put some thought into it. So what exactly pushes your pieces, your creative process?
Okay, emotions somehow are attached. No, because while I was, from the reviews or the responses I've gotten, people, some people are telling me, you were emotional on that, because I was with the producer. I was like, okay, this is the love song. This is the angle you're supposed to take.
Yeah.
Even the people I was working with, because giving a review, while I was working with Kenneth Mugabe.
Yeah.
This is what Kenneth said. He said, I'm a last born to my mom, so yeah. I have that change even when I'm singing. And I'm a hard guy, so bring out that change like it was a flex, you know. But but because sometimes you need to tap into those emotions.
True.
Yeah. It's all about positive emotions. I look at the bottom, like, okay, what positive thing can come out of, you know?
The fact that you studied, you've had like a career prospect in environmental science, yeah, and you're now doing, you know, spoken word. Has that had any effect on like your guardians or your parents, or like how did they receive your interest in the arts? No, were they very receptive of that?
I was talking to my mom. Unfortunately, she has never attended any of my shows.
Yeah.
So I was talking to her, and she, because people share the videos, right?
Sure.
Because I try to keep my life separate. I'm like, okay, if I'm an artist, this is an artist. If I'm focusing on education, this is what I'm supposed to do as a guest. At the end of the day, so she told me, she needed a copy of my EP. Then she asked me how much. I told her 20K. She was like, that is a lot of money. So I told her, you're not my target audience. I know it's a bit weird, but I told her, you're not my target audience. People who are there will appreciate it. But there are sometimes when those small gigs or the deals in poetry supported me in education.
Yes.
You get?
Well.
So it won't make sense if someone starts questioning the choices I'm making about you.
Do they know that? Do they know that spoken word got you through some moments of school?
They know, because they know like, okay, the money that comes from the small performances, I'll use it in transport and chipping a few bills. Then the other company I can check out on tuition and research and what. So, you know.
I've been very curious. I love how, from my few conversations with some of the poets, for some reason their parents have always been supportive of their craft. And growing up, it was, I don't know, I had a different feeling about that, because growing up, I wanted to be a DJ. My parents never understood that.
No, but you know, I knew my choices, right? I'm working here. This is just to support me and what I told myself, emceeing events and what. So,
so they've had absolutely zero reason to, you know, doubt your intentions or anything. Makes sense. Makes sense. Brilliant.
Because I that's why I told you I couldn't drop that EP before graduating.
That was the reason for that. Brilliant. Are there any pieces you've written in the past that you've listened to over time and you're like, nah, that was not it. That was not it. I could have done better with this. Does that ever happen to you? Like, you've written pieces that have actually been published?
It does, but me as a person, after writing a piece, I take like 3 months without even performing it anyway.
Okay. Why is that?
I need to first feel it as a person. And I'm like, okay, there is a need, then I.
So you give yourself time to absorb the piece
and
really, really take it in.
Yeah. I don't regret.
Yeah.
I make sure when I'm writing, I also put into account like 30 years from now, people will be like, okay, this is an old man who wrote. So I try to also account for that.
Yeah.
So I make sure, even if I'm trying to play around or it's a chiller piece, I make sure I put in effort.
Do you ever have time, because I know that your poetry is mostly entirely in your hands, do you ever get time where you take off time from poetry and say, I'm going into a hiatus, I won't do any poetry for maybe this period of time, I'm taking my own rest?
I do, actually.
Does that happen often? Do you do that often?
Yeah, I'm every month I plan. I'm like, this month I'll perform like how many?
Yeah.
Like six times, like, yeah. So I try as much as possible to, you know,
to get some rest.
Yeah.
That's great. Mm. That's great. From your album, from your EP, and from previous sports, maybe like work, who you mentioned is like working hard, there's been an element of fusing poetry and music.
Yeah, it's called Sowetry.
It's called Sowetry.
Yeah.
There's a name for it.
A song and a poem. Yeah, it's Sowetry. Sowetry.
Now, that bit I did not know.
Oh.
What brought that on? Why are we seeing more collaboration between musicians and poets?
Poetry has been deep-rooted throughout our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And in different ways, people would add instrumentations and what and what. If poetry is supposed to be entertaining, then like you can go an extra mile and you know, put instrumentation, traditional.
So if you can give it something extra, why not give it something extra?
Yeah, because even music, because most music, the lyrics are like songs and so it's,
Let's tap into the wellness of poets a little bit.
Yeah.
I know that in the Ugandan space, poetry is still a growing art.
People's
appreciation of it is still a growing art.
Yeah.
And so, like you said, there are those people that look up to you, but at the moment, it might not be in their place to entirely make a career out of poetry,
A
sole career.
Yeah, yeah.
Was there a similar moment in your life where the poetry was happening, yes, but you are not yet giving it that much attention because it was probably going to cost you more
Let me be honest to everyone out there. Before you even set out to be an artist or what, you need to have a hustle that supports the artist before the artist starts supporting like the real person. You know, like, we have to be honest. Because, man, the reason why it was easier for me to go to record to the studios, get Kenneth Mugabe, and because I had some hustle where I could get the money to. You know, it was vice versa.
Mm.
Poetry supported the hustle at some point.
Yeah.
But then the hustle made me some come and I was like, now let me invest. Now the poetry, you know, it's vice versa, but you have to have it. You have to be honest. We shall need the money at some point.
So that hustle, you had that hustle to get your
No, even right now I have it. I'm emceeing events, weddings and what, so yeah.
The man is an entrepreneur.
We have to be real, yeah? True. We have to be real. Yeah.
No, I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. I think that is the one thing that I've also noticed about creatives on an international scene. More than often, they figure out other alternative things to like...
If you're to be a full-time...
creative.
A full-time creative. You have to make sure every time you step out of your house, you're getting paid.
Okay. Are there Ugandan creatives who are at that level?
Earlier on this year, I've had conversations with a few of the creatives as my friends and that. Our first, Sandra K. Yeah, the Usoga Princess.
Mm.
Yeah, we met at Ndongo Moscow Sound Festival. So we're having this conversation. And she was like, you know what, this year I'm moving out full-time. I'm going to be an artist, you know. So she was performing at Rostand Rhyme. She was in Ethno, you know, Zambia. So, okay.
She had a schedule.
No, but by the time someone chooses to, they're like, I'm going to be a full-time artist.
Yes.
That means they have thought about it.
Mm.
They had a job first. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even shout out to Dr. Hillary. I also had a conversation with Dr. Hira Lokelo.
Yeah,
he's a stand-up comedian, but he was telling me, man, I'm leaving work of being a medical doctor to focus
on comedy.
On comedy,
I know him; he's really gifted.
So he has been everywhere. Actually, I was even talking to Okelo. He told me to him, comedy is like a job.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're to be an artist, make sure you wake up. It's like a job. He was like, I wake up at 6, I'm writing jokes.
Mm.
Wow. You understand?
Yeah, I think that really hits deep.
It's 6 a.m. The way you wake up and prepare for work, I'm also waking up preparing. Yes. I'm writing this, I'm doing this. So
That speaks a lot to creatives that might want to earn full time out of their creative business, but yeah, still treat it like a hobby.
No, let it be a job then.
They should treat it like a job if they want it.
Someone is preparing to go to work, they wake up at 6, you also prepare, get a pen and paper, write, you know.
And that also reflects in your value, how much you should charge.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's brilliant. That's really, really brilliant. We're almost done, Mitch. But before we go, what do you do? You mentioned something about resting sometimes. You take off some time to rest and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
That the interesting conversation usually is that most creatives, or what most creatives do for like work, is what we usually do. Well, I'm also a creative, so I won't say we, but what people usually do to get by in their pastime is what creatives do for free, for like a living of sorts. Like some people's outlet, in case they need like a stress outlet, is to like write poetry, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is like their outlet.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a creative who does professionally what a lot of things are just trying out as hobbies.
Yeah, yeah.
So to you, what is it that you do that as a pastime? What do you do for your free time?
I try to live life. Yeah.
Define live life, Mitch.
No, man, to talk to people, yeah, sleep. Like I don't pressure. I'm like, this week I'm not doing anything. Yeah.
One last random question. I've been to a couple of your performances, and from the audience I pick reactions like, hey, Mitch, you'd never come at my girlfriend with that tang manangi. Because your pieces like really, really hit deep.
No, but
I'm just curious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Random question.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Has your art gained you quite the following with like a female audience?
Am I supposed to say this? If people relate to it, I don't know the follow, like in a romantic way, or people just
that's
understand.
Exactly how we mean it, in a romantic way.
The few people, you know, over the last years, poetry is like that social space. I mean, a bit freely and what I've met a couple of people and I can't say a huge following. That's exaggerating.
I won't prod you further.
And those are your words. I want to stay away from that. But
I will not prod you much further.
People do appreciate.
Yeah.
I don't know about the romantic way, because sometimes it is a character. Sometimes I try to keep it professional. I'm like, okay, if you're off stage,
yeah,
and you know, one thing I learned, every hand you shake,
yes,
yeah, you're trying to reduce money. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The more females you have, these are the people who can pay for your show, but the more you get along with them, they'll be wanting to come for free. So, so to me, it's business. I know it's a bit funny, but
it's a very interesting conversation. Okay, I think it makes sense.
But
yeah,
that's the fact.
Yeah.
The moment you become familiar with them and what, yes, it's not good for business.
Mm, it's never good for business.
Yeah, so sometimes I don't actually, I don't ask even for your numbers. Maybe if you do, I can give you mine, but I try to keep the conversation limited. And because imagine if every show I go to, I'm getting what would I be doing?
That's very interesting. Thank you, Mitch. It's a real Mitch, ladies and gentlemen. You're going to share with us some parting words, just like a last minute inspiration from your lessons. But before, and also, could I interest you in just giving us like a small verse, kutontoma? But before he does that, I think one of my biggest takeaways from our conversation, Mitch, is about creatives that have plans to professionally roll out on their talent, start treating it as that, as a professional career, as opposed to expecting to reap big from it and then play games with
but professionally goes be, you know, very many aspects, you know, you know, sometimes even the dressing alone can be a turn
small
for
things
people.
Like dressing, yeah,
because if someone is you know, you've seen me on some shows, I'm turning up in suits and what. These are small things, but people want to relate to you in every aspect.
Yeah.
If it is a conference, people want to relate to you. I know we as artists, sometimes you're like, I'm an artist, I have to be as an artist. But those people are the ones who have the money and the deal. So sometimes you have to approach them in a way they are comfortable with and familiar.
Awesome. So I would just like to pitch this to the audience, the listeners. My question is, do you think that creatives or maybe people in the creative space in Uganda are at that space where they are treating their talent as a profession? Like, do you think they're putting in as much work as they need to be able to entirely bank on their talents as a career? We'd love to hear your thoughts. Just share with us your feedback. And the number to share it on is 0709-970-970.
Is it on mobile money?
It's
someone can.
It's on mobile money. If they feel they need to share with us a coffee to support the podcast.
And actually we should. And even the podcast has some merchandise.
True. So they can reach out. And they can always reach out. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So 0709-970-970. Please share with us your opinions. Could be visual, could be audio, could be text. We will take it all. And we shall reflect on some of these bits of feedback in the next episode of AfroMillennial, the podcast. Mitch,
yes.
Parting words. Just share with us life lessons off the top of your mind and then take it away with a short verse.
There is something called social capital, You know, usually I tell people, try to be part of something at least. Times are hard, but be part of something. Social group, whatever. You talk to people and what. Because sometimes you never know the people you're meeting, right?
Mm-hmm.
They can help you career-wise and introduce yourself, tell people what to do. So I should say the power of social capital. Like, talk to people, be out there, be part of something. You never know. And mental health, if you feel like, get some time off. We know the hustle is real. And if you have a hustle, first try it out before being a full-time artist.
True.
Because they are... Because the people I've told you, these are people who had jobs. So by the time they decided to go full-time artist, at least they have their reasons, right?
Beautiful. It's Ariel Mitch, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. People that would like to get in touch with your work, how do they get it? Do you have like pages, like social media profiles?
Social media. Isa Vidya Mitch
across all platforms.
Yeah, Mitch is M-I-T-C-H.
Do not forget Isabia Mitch across all social media platforms.
You can even Google, they can even reach out to you.
They can.
Because I know you are not.
Absolutely, yes. He was about to say you can Google him, and he's right. You can you can Google the man. Wikipedia knows Isabia Mitch. But you can always reach out to us as well. Please don't forget to check out AfroMillennial on all social media spaces.
I have a show coming up here, 10th August.
Oh, yes, you forgot to mention that.
It's called Mitch's Manifest.
And when is it?
10th August, German Culture Center. It's from 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. I'll be sharing a few pieces. It's purely spoken word.
Yeah.
It will be a silent experience, and it will be by guest list. You know, someone was complaining.
I
didn't invite them. No, but it will be by guest list. I'm looking. The number I'm looking at is 150.
Awesome.
Yeah, but I was looking through the reservations. I was roughly like at 120.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the entrance is 15K. But we're not doing gate collections.
Mm-hmm.
It's a prepaid event.
Okay.
It's for only people who have.
Wow. Wish you all the best with that, Mitch, and we hope AfroMillennial gets invited because clearly there's like 10 positions left, so
yeah.
Awesome. Thank you very much, guys, for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next 2 weeks on the next episode of AfroMillennial, the podcast. Mitch, take it away.
Which piece? You know, this is a bit weird, like thing of dope. Let me just do something of my classic or the best piece, like Kampala. Yeah, actually it's also on my EP. It's called Echivuga Echitalina Linya. It's a Uganda piece.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do like a verse and hopefully people enjoy.
Yeah.
Muchibuga jenva webukera buli omwe jala bire chitangala. Tweya bwetine tuangala. Nasa Road, ebipapula by'ekikwangala. Music yabamba kuba dancehall abalaba kuba lingala. Kati nkukiriza kukaloke dangala, abatuuze gye baliira amakola ga kiragala abasinga babiyita biragala. Pleni oba kibanga babitabika. Bibawo essanyu kirabika naye abandi bababika, abasinga obasanga butabika. Tuyiya dduniya buli omu ayingirawo mu sitayiro. Paaka nkadde, abamba biramu ku Kairo. Kati nkutuuseewo mu kiro, Kampala Road ng'okkirirawo ku Kaboozi. Top pub gy'osanga abaana abalenga Akaboozi. Anko jangu tulabe ge maloboozi, shoti oba longo. Ebyo bibeera biboozi. Mu kibuga gye nva buli omu abeera Muganda era towulirayo atyenyi. Okuggyako abasajja abanvu abaddugavu, abalina birayini mu bwenyi n'abakyala b'amannyo ga kyenvu ab'ebikkiro basanga mu kisenyi. Kikomando, Molokonyi ne Kabirizi. Ebyo bisangayo eyo ku Mabirizi, naye waliwo n'abasabirizi ku makubo ng'enjala ebabalambirizi. William, Nasa Road, diri w'otusangira, tusumagira, tonanagira. Obusajja bwa kansa obututangira, denaffe oluusi tubulangira. That was my time. My name is Mitch Isabirye. Afri Millennial Podcast.
Thank you.
Mu kibuga gye nva, we bukeera buli omu eyo gy'alabira ekitangaala. Tweyiya bwetyo ne tuwangaala. Nasa Road, ebipapula by'ekikwangala. Music yabamu bakuba dancehall, abalala bakuba lingala. Kati nkukkiriza kukaaluka eddangala, abatuuze gye baliira amakoola ga kiragala, abasinga babiyita biragala. Pleni oba kibanga babitabika, bibawo essanyu kirabika naye abandi bababika, abasinga obasanga butabika. Tuyiya dduniya buli omu ayingirawo mu sitayiro.